We have a malfunction.
it crashed.
For that song, I was so excited. No,
I was too.
Go back to
the computer crashed, and now I got to sit through the ad again. Oh,
a little history on that.
That was funny.
My late great friend Matt Lodi in Cleveland. We started out in the business together. We did a show from 10 to midnight on WHK in Cleveland called Tonight in Baseball. And that was our open. What Elijah had, it brought, I mean, I just, obviously it overwhelmed me with memories, but we would basically follow Indians games and do a baseball show, which, you know, to do the scores, you had to go out there, yes, I'm dating myself, run out in the newsroom and rip off the copy from the printer, from the AP. Baseball.
Okay, here it is. Here take two.
Fucking baseball.
Nope.
From Boston to Dubuque.
Man, I heard this open and song thousands of times.
Great song.
Oh, man.
The Simpsons version's fun, too.
Hope you're smiling down on us, Matt, listening to that. Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase, our show presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD products curated for life. Let's say hello to friend of the show, MLB catcher Caleb Joseph Nashvillian, huge Predators fan, great father and husband. I don't know what more I can say. I'm trying to read everything he wrote down. No, I think that's about it. Caleb, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great, doing great. What a great song. You know, that song takes me back to the old Greer Stadium. I was my grandfather at 4, 5, 6 years old, 8, 9, 10, all the way up. And they used to play that song almost every day. And just the pureness of baseball when I hear that song comes to mind.
I think what I you know, I couldn't do, and probably I'm surprised a program director, somebody didn't scream at me, but I was a guy very young, just started out in the business. Maybe they didn't care because I was a 10 to midnight show. But I didn't want to talk over that song, so every time I would just let that open play and play. Like I said, I'm surprised someone did. Would you talk? Like, we can't run that much music. Get going on the show. But I don't know. It didn't feel right talking over that song. I just would sit there and sing along. And, yeah, it's a great song. Wow, what a position we've got here, huh? Opportunity for the Stros and the Braves to punch their tickets into the World Series. It starts tonight with Houston against the Red Sox. The Red Sox came into this series, Caleb, just mashing the ball. I mean, they were hitting more than double the home runs of anybody else. And that is the beauty of baseball, right? You've been through all this, and things change. It doesn't remain. Sometimes it changes, and sometimes it doesn't. But in this case, hey, the Astros are like, okay, I'll see your home run, and I'll match your home run, or I'll see your high-scoring output, and we'll do the same. And here they are, one game away from getting to the World Series. What do you think?
Yeah, you're right. It seemed like Kiki Hernandez was possibly going to be running for president here in 2 days, 2 years or whatever, at the rate he was going. I mean, I couldn't get him off my Twitter. I just showing up everywhere. And that just shows you, a lot of it has to do with when you get hot at the right time. And you know, these seven-game series, a lot can happen. I mean, imagine, it's basically two regular season series smashed into one. And on any given night, any team in the big leagues can go take 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3 from any other team in the show. But you have to give a lot of credit to Brent Strom over there, the Astros pitching coach. He's done a really good job with a lot of the misfortunes that they've had. And he has found a way to kind of calm those bats over there in Boston because they were rolling. They were absolutely rolling. And while he's been able to do that, the Astros have come on. And that is arguably, in my opinion, the most dangerous lineup, maybe second to the Dodgers. But that lineup is so difficult to navigate. And they're heading back to Houston, and that place is rowdy and is a difficult place to play.
Is that because of, well, it's obviously not just because of two guys, but how important are guys like Correa and Altuve just because they've been in this spot so much over the years and have so much experience?
oh, you can go right up and down that lineup, and there's no break. You talk about Yordano Alvarez. He is one of the quietest superstars that I've ever seen. He is so difficult to pitch to. I mean, opposite field homer off of Chris Sale. Are you kidding me? Like, the guy throws 97 crossfire. It should be coming out behind him, and he just nice and easy, opposite field homer, no problem. Got him for another two RBI, I think, what was it, double or something, down the left field line. He is absolutely nasty. You're talking about Bregman's back, obviously Correa. Michael Brantley, the most professional hitter I've ever seen live, most professional, just will not give in, will find a way to do the right thing. Was a part of all those big teams in Cleveland when they were making their runs there. Even Maldonado is going to give you a great at-bat. Kyle Tucker, is he a household name in anywhere but Texas? Maybe, maybe not. The guy's nasty. I mean, these guys, they're stacked from 1 to 9. There's no break. And if the thing is, they can beat you in multiple different ways. They can move guys over. They can take that two-strike shorter swing and punch that ball to right field, like Gurriel did last night. Gurriel's dad is arguably the most famous hitter in Cuba of all time. People don't even know that.
Wow.
He's coming from incredible lineage, and that guy's unbelievable. He's, what, 37, 38, probably going to get another 1 or 2 year deal with Houston. That guy can absolutely mash. I think he has 65 playoff hits or something. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. That team mashes.
He hit 319, Gurriel, and he hit seventh. He's about seventh, exactly, in the lineup because all these other guys you just listed. It's a tough lineup.
With power, and you know, there. I was talking to Kendall Graveman after we traded him. Well, when Seattle traded Graveman to Houston, I was asking him about him. Well, we played him 2 or 3 weeks later. I said, you know, what do you think? What do you got? He's like, this is a real deal, man. This is big boy baseball over here. I was like, yeah, you know, you can tell. You can see it. And I said, who's impressed you the most? And he said, Correa. I said, really, that guy commands a room. He's a pro. He goes, he's the real deal. I said, what does he think about hitting? He goes, he wants to try and do two things. He either wants to walk or hit a ball 100 miles an hour. And I think a lot of those guys have adopted kind of that mindset, which is they're going to really, really beat you in the zone. They're not going to chase. They don't chase much. They don't strike out much, but they're a tough, tough lineup to get through.
Is it easier or more difficult the way the game is set up today? The way, you know, I mean, gosh, a pitcher getting to the sixth inning, we almost celebrate it in the playoffs. I mean, it's like, oh, wow, 7 innings is like 8 innings the other night. Holy moly. What happened? Did we just go back in time, 30 years? Is it the way they shuffle pitchers in and out of the lineup now, the way the game is played, is that easier or more difficult for a catcher?
Ooh. If you have an idea of what they're trying to do, game planning wise, because a lot of these games are planned out before it happens, whether we believe it or not, it is. A lot of it's tried as if it's a scheduled game plan. Anything that kind of throws a curve in there can put a wrinkle in it and kind of screw things up. But if you know what's coming behind the guy in the fifth inning, if you know what's coming on the seventh inning, if you know who's going to hopefully face these three guys in the eighth, you can start trying to strategically navigate around how you're going to do it. So it's a little bit of both, Darren. It's easier but harder. It's harder if you can't hit those perfect pockets, which how many times does that really happen in a baseball game? But if you can get the right matchups, it does. You do like your strengths as a pitcher always over what a hitter brings just because it's so hard to hit. What happens is when you start getting guys that they're facing other hitters that are, you know, technically in unfavorable matchups based on the analytics, that's when it starts to get a little bit hairy. But Valdez, I mean, the guy pitches. He's left-handed. He throws a sinker. I know those things are still possible to be thrown in the big leagues. You know, don't have to throw all four seams up at the top of the zone. But I love it. I love watching that guy who's not overpowering, who locates, and he goes 8 innings in the playoff. Absolutely love it.
I'm going to ask the Joe fan question that I get asked all the time. And, look, I'm going to put myself in in the Joe fan category too, because I find myself asking, you know, we all kind of like scratch our head, like, why can't they do this? Why don't they do something about this? So the shift, everybody has been watching the shift. This is not something new, but there's all this data out there. So these teams are armed and equipped with exactly with spray charts and where everybody's hitting the ball. And so they're adjusting. And then everybody at home watching or in the stands watching, you look out there and you see this gap that you could run, you know, four trains through. And there's nobody there, nobody home. And everybody is screaming, you know, why can't you just put the ball over there, you know, bunt or do this? Like, we've all been guilty of that. I know it's easier said and done than done, but what about that? What do you, you know, I'm sure you've heard it too, right? I'm sure you get asked that question. I mean, my gosh, I've been asked that like 1,000 times. Like, why, in the bigs, why don't they take advantage of that? Why don't they do something about it? Instead, they hit right where they put the guy. It is kind of comical, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, even as a fan, it's maddening. It's absolutely maddening. And even as a teammate, sometimes it's maddening. I don't know if anybody remembers Chris Davis, He was a teammate of mine, and I've watched 9 guys play second base against him. And my poor friend is hitting 160 in the big leagues, and we're like, bud, just lay one down, get on base, like, get it going, man. Like, you can do it. Your chances of striking out right now are about 85%, you know, so, like, just get it going. You never know. Something like that might lock you in. But if you don't practice it, it is really difficult. Another main reason, Darren, is because a lot of guys believe that they are being compensated based on OPS, your on-base plus your slugging. Well, most of that differential in the OPS is not on the on-base. It's in the slug. So the slug is obviously your doubles, your triples, your homers. And so guys want to go for the extra base hit because that's how they think they're compensated. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Even though a bunt single is a 2,000 slug, and you're going, guys, that's pretty good. You know, yes, you can bunt it every single time, and you would have the highest slug in the entire league. Now, it wouldn't happen because they would stop shifting you. But I've always been on the impression that, hey, if they're going to shift you, take the shift, bunt against it, go practice it. You can't just show up and say, okay, I'm just going to decide to bunt today. Today I'm going to bunt one down third baseline. You have to practice it. It's actually really difficult. But if you go in there and practice it and master that, you can lay it down. Then they have to stop shifting you. Now you open up your pull side. Most guys are pull side. You open up the pull side for that ball that skirts through the four hole and can get through for your base hit while you're trying to go for the slug. But I will say it is a little bit difficult. I played golf yesterday, and I had a dog leg left, and I like to play a little bit of a cut. And I said, you know what, I'm going to try and draw this one around the tree line, and I rarely try and do that. So sure enough, I don't really practice it very much because I just kind of play a fade. So, okay, I'm just going to draw one in the trees. Sure enough, I go to draw it. I draw it 50 feet left, lose a ball out of bounds. And then I'm going, why did I ever try and do that? I never practiced it. I don't do it. What an idiot. You're not a pro. You're not a drawer of the golf ball. Like, what are you doing? You're being stupid. So that analogy is trying to show that that's what happens sometimes. Like, when these guys do try and bunt, they bunt it right back to the pitcher. You should hear what they say when they come in the dugout. I can't say it here on the radio, but it's not very good.
That is the dilemma, no question. We're talking to Caleb Joseph, talking some baseball. The LCS continues on. It is Boston at Houston tonight. Astros lead 3-2. And then, of course, tomorrow it'll be the Braves in Atlanta taking on the Dodgers. So, Caleb, last night in L.A., the Braves had it all lined up. They had their hottest pitcher in Max Fried going. The Dodgers had a bullpen on total fumes, a bullpen day after getting battered the night before, and they stepped up and they won. You know, you can understand, you've been in these playoff series. The momentum, they always talk about momentum. It looks like a team is dead in the water, but somehow you can turn it around. That's the funny thing about baseball. And I think we've seen it in hockey and some other series as well in other sports you could probably relate. But tell me about the momentum, because it still looks like the Braves are in great shape here, but The Dodgers have to have life after last night.
Right, they are. And if there was a team that can go on the road and defend themselves even behind 3-2, it's the LA Dodgers. So they were just there last year. They won it all. They've been there before, and it's pretty much the same crew. I think the only thing that really saved the Dodgers last night was them playing at home, to be honest with you. Like you said, Fried's on the mound. He's been solid. He just didn't have it last night. And especially after Fred Freeman pounds a curveball off of Joe Kelly to take early 2-0 lead, you can just feel the Braves. They're wanting to finish it right now. They're going for the jugular. And I think the only saving grace really was the 55 or however many thousand people at Chavez Ravine waiting to explode. And then you have some key contributors and Chris Taylor and Pujols, AJ Pollock, these guys come in, they start getting the crowd back into it. And then once they got train on the tracks, they started rolling and it was over. Fried just didn't have it, but yeah, momentum is huge. And especially that place, if you have not been to Dodger Stadium in LA, it is gigantic. I mean, it is just massive. People talk about the third deck syndrome. When you play in the minor leagues, you usually only have, you know, a lower bowl and maybe a small second level. And Buck used to always talk about the third deck syndrome, especially with outfielders and just noise and the massive amounts of people. Chavez Ravine has four decks, four levels, and they are massive. And that was one of the first things I realized when I got there. This place is different. It's old, and it's got character, but it is huge. And when those people get going, forget it. It's like the crazy Preds fans, you know, when we're behind and, you know, the intermission, when the fans just don't stop. They don't stop cheering for the entire intermission. And then you can just tell it just energizes the home players. And I think that's what happened last night. They got the ball rolling, and they were able to really tack it on. Now they've got some momentum, but they're going into a hostile Braves country, and they really want it.
I wanted to ask you about Albert Pujols, because I was looking, you know, his career spans almost the entire 21st century. So that is an interesting span in your baseball career, right? He's a superstar when you're a kid, and now you played against him when he's getting up there in age. He's still playing right now. He gets in there last night, he bangs out a couple of hits. He can still hit the left-handers pretty well. But give me your thoughts on just, you know, that whole perspective of a great player like that.
Right. And, I mean, remember how that whole thing went down in Anaheim. I mean, Buck used to always say, never let a star fall on you. And, boy, he was right. I didn't know what he was talking about when he first said it. And as you've seen some of these really iconic players starting to kind of hit the back end of their career, you realize what he's saying. But he went to L.A., and that was a story. And who would have known that the L.A. Dodgers would have picked him up? I mean, this is a team that, in my opinion, is masterful with their roster. They're unbelievable with how they transfer guys to and from the DL. Creating roster spots is as if it's almost as if they have a 70-man roster. I mean, they have guy after guy after guy after guy after guy. And when probably the last team that I would have picked for Albert Pujols would have been the Dodgers, it ended up being the Dodgers. And sure enough, Max Muncy gets hurt. Pujols is in there. He's able to contribute. This guy's seen it all. Seen it all, done it all. And what a great just ambassador for baseball in general. But I think for all of the old school guys watching the old veteran come in and get a couple hits and keep the baton passed, I think it's great for baseball and just for his legacy. If this is it for him, it would for him to be able to come in and get over some of that adversity of being designated for assignment as a potential Hall of Famer. What a way to kind of rebound for him and just the game in general. He's moving around pretty slow, but I'll tell you what, he can still hit, and I wouldn't be surprised if at 55 years old he could still hit. And I was talking to Edgar Martinez in Seattle, and he was a hitting coach a couple years ago for the Mariners, and he said he was talking about Chris Taylor, somebody, and one player said, "Hey Edgar, how would you do off the, like, what would your approach be against this guy?" And Edgar said, "Well, I'd probably take a walk, and I'd probably have a bloop single RBI to right center, maybe a double to left field. They were like, just a bloop single and a double? And he goes, well, yeah, but I am just 53 now, you know? So I think the story, what I'm trying to say is, even at probably 55, I think Pujols will be able to hit. He might not be able to run the bases, but that guy was just born to hit baseballs, and it's good to see him still doing it now.
We're talking to Caleb Joseph as we get a look at the LCS going on in the National and American Leagues. So you've caught in a lot of different situations. I look at last night, and you know Max Fried, who is a very, very talented young pitcher for the Braves, doesn't have his best stuff. When you're behind the plate and you know that, you know, the guy you're catching, maybe it's not all clicking, maybe it's not all there that night, and you guys are talking, what are some of those conversations like, especially with a young pitcher, as you're trying to, you know, to calm him down, get him back in the zone where you all can try and make something happen?
Yeah, it's difficult. I'll tell you this. I wish I had a magic eight ball back there that I could shake up and put back into my back pocket and just figure out, what do you think, Mr. Magic 8-Ball? Because what I'm putting down is getting absolutely walloped forward. So why don't you take a look and tell me what you think? But it's one of those things that there are games where you just know they don't have it. You try over the course of a spring training, over the course of the beginning of a season, you're trying to find ways to figure out what they need to do to get back on track, whether it's a certain pitch in a certain spot, something mechanically they do, and it's easy. Once you work with these guys every day, you figure out what their keys and cues are. And once you kind of go through that checklist of, okay, he's not getting the ball to the glove side. It seemed like he was missing quite a bit on the arm side there. Sometimes it has to do with fatigue. Sometimes it has to do with direction, just height of arm, all these different things that you're looking for, like I said, the checklist. Once you hit all those and they still don't have it, you're trying your best just to be in damage control. So all you're trying to do is just keep the numbers as small as possible, and now you're going in for an absolute dogfight. You're going to try and win the game, I don't know, 5-7, 7-8, something like that. You go into just damage control, and that's what ended up getting them was the 2- and 3-run homer. You know, it's not the 4 singles that ended up scoring 1 run that really beat you. It's the 2-3-run homer, the grand slam. It's those real daggers that get you. And he didn't have it, and I'm sure Darno was back there working with him and trying to figure it all out, and it just didn't work out. Now, like you said earlier, I mean, the Braves, I think they still probably lead the last remaining 4 teams in the big leagues, or in the playoffs, rather, with innings pitched out of the bullpen. So they're probably still in decent shape. And, again, they're heading home. But some days you just have that, and Max has been so solid for the Braves over the, you know, past 4 or 5 months, and just too bad for him. But you got to give some credit to the Dodgers. They didn't give up, and they took advantage of all the mistakes.
It looks like they're going to go with Ian Anderson in Game 6, but knowing that you have Charlie Morton, who is a veteran and has been in a lot of these situations, that if you need him for Game 7, how important is that to have that guy in your back pocket?
Can't beat it. Absolutely set up perfectly for the Braves, and that's not by coincidence, and I believe that's probably by design. Alex Anthopoulos deserves so much credit. Snedker over there, that staff, they deserve so much credit. I remember back in the trade deadline, and they were hanging in the middle. New York was kind of up top. They were kind of laying in the weeds, and everybody's trying to figure out who's going to do what, you know, with the playoffs back to the shortened rosters, or not rosters, but what is it, the 8 teams that are going to make the playoffs or whatever. And everybody's kind of wondering what are the Braves going to do. They've got so many pieces here. And he goes out and he just starts buying. He starts buying, and people are going, man, I'll tell you what, when you're in a clubhouse and you're the GM on your team, of your team, goes out and starts adding and adding and adding, it is such a vote of confidence, and it's a shot in the arm. And what you want to do is you want to go out and reward him for going out and being a buyer. There's nothing like being a buyer at the deadline. You feel like you got a chance. And he went and made some unbelievable moves, getting Jock Peterson, Duvall, all these guys that have come in and made huge contributions to the Braves. And having a guy like Charlie Morton here in Game 7, if you need it, is just it's lined up perfectly. And they've done a great job over there. Big Braves fan since I was a kid watching TBS and all those guys, Chipper, McGriff, and all them. And it might be their year. I really like the Braves. I really do. And being at home for 6 and 7 is going to be interesting.
So you like Braves, Stros World Series?
I do.
Okay.
I do, and I think it's going to be straight up pitching versus hitting. To be honest with you, I think it's going to be the obviously the Braves can hit. I mean, they've got a really nice lineup, really solid lineup. But I think it's going to be an old school just pitching versus hitting.
Wow, good stuff as always, Caleb. Thanks for doing this. Have a great rest of your day and a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Caleb Joseph, MLB catcher, Nashvillian. Good insights there, and he said it. Chase, you should feel good, man. That's
I do.
The second person now told you, don't worry about it. It's okay. Braves are going to get there.
I don't know if he said don't worry about it, but he said he thinks it might be their year.
That's what he said, in a roundabout way.
All right, yeah. You go on thinking that.
May have ad-libbed that.
You let that guard down. Coach Willie will jump in and get you.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I'm waiting for the whistle to be blown.
I honestly want it to get done tomorrow. I would feel.
Oh, good. You don't want it to go 7?
No.
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 You want
no. I want it to get done tomorrow, and then it sets up perfectly because you could have Charlie for Game 1 in the World Series. You get Freed back, and everything just works out how it needs to work out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. I've yet to meet a fan that says, you know what, I want this to go all the way to Game 7
yeah,
when we're up 3-1. Like, I don't want to win Game 5. I don't want to win Game 6.
If my team is not in it, then I love Game 7. But
I want to do it in Game 7. Like, yeah. I've yet to meet that fan.
Okay.
We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number 1 of Darren, Donnie, and Chase next.